Hi, my name is Jason Weber. I'm president and CEO of Silver North Resources Limited. Silver North's a silver explorer with two excellent silver projects in the Yukon Territory of Canada, one in the Kena District called Haldane, and another in the southern part of the territory, just at the BC-Yukon border called Tim, which is a partnership with Coeur Mining. I have on the call today with me Rob Duncan, who's our Vice President of Exploration, and we look forward to chatting.
Jason, thank you very much for the introduction. Rob, Jason, welcome. And Jason, in your case, welcome back. You have done some interviews with Crux Investor before. I don't think it's been about 2 years since you were last on. And it's a different company, or the name of the company was different. It was Alianza Minerals. Obviously, you've had a name change in the last 2 years. Perhaps you can just kind of bring us up to date about the background, the culture, and you know what was behind that name change, and what does it mean for the company?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. It was about a year. About a year ago that we started discussing the potential of changing the name, really changing the focus of the company to be a more silver focused explorer. Prior to that, as Alianza, we were definitely focused on silver with our Haldane project in the Yukon Territory and in the Kena District. But we had other projects that were ongoing at the time as well. We were doing some copper exploration and gold exploration in Colorado, some projects in Nevada. And we made this wonderful discovery at Haldane in the Yukon, and they got some interest, but it kind of got lost in the mix. And when you looked at the discovery, and next door to us, we had Alexco Resources, who was operating the Keno Hill mine. They were having financial difficulties. And I think that led people to look at, you know, our discovery and say, you know, that's fantastic. You get some nice high-grade silver there. But how is that, you know, how are you going to make a go of it when the guys next door mining are having trouble? And what changed really was Hecla Resources came in and took Alexco over and basically decided to take this on, recapitalize the mine. One of the problems they had was throughput at the mill. So one way to solve that is to get more active faces operating at the mine, which meant more equipment, which which was really the problem Alexco had. They never really could invest the capital to get that more equipment, more faces operating.
Well, Hecla, more development, increase the rate of development, just get that throughput up.
And
it's always a challenge with a narrow vein kind of underground mine, just to get that throughput up.
And when you layer on top of that, the fact that, you know, their plan probably was to get the mine up and running and reinvest capital in to get it up, you know, to 100% throughput at the mill. But they had a stream with Wheaton Precious Metals that was, you know, it was on the silver, which ended up becoming their primary commodity. And there's a bit of a divergence here, but it does really play a big part in why we made this change. And on that stream, when Alexco took this on 10, 15 years ago, these mines in the Kena District were thought to be zinc rich at depth. And unfortunately, fortunately, depends on how you look at it, Their exploration team did a great job of finding high-grade silver resources and reserves at depth. And so they now had this stream on what became or what continued to be their primary commodity. And this is one of the things that really impacted the profitability of the mine. And so it wasn't necessarily the problem with the geology, the metallurgy, anything like that. It was just the fact that they had a stream on the silver, which took, you know, a whole bunch of their profit right off the top. So that all kind of got rectified when Hecla came in, bought out the stream, and now they're going to move the project forward. So as Alianza, we were looking at that and say, well, how do we get ourselves positioned so that when investors look at the Kena District again, silver investors said, yeah, Kena District's a place I want to be. We wanted to make sure that they were looking at us as being the next significant exploration story in the district. So that really kind of turned the corner for us to say, okay, let's rebrand the company as a silver explorer. Let's focus on our two silver projects in the Yukon. And sort of as a sideline, we started doing a little more research into the metal itself and what its future looked like. And we got really excited. When you look at the green energy transition, anything, the high tech, Internet of Things, silver is a critical component of almost everything we use today. And if you look at the silver demand profile since 2020, it's been steadily rising. And that's largely right now due to solar panel demand. And, that got us really, quite excited. The industrial component of the silver market has a really strong future, and you kind of layer on the socio-economic issues, the geopolitical issues that are ongoing right now and driving the silver price today. We kind of felt there was two mega trends coming together here that could be really positive for silver. So it just for us really made sense to make this shift from Alianza. And rather than just going Alianza Silver, we decided let's take something that kind of more represents what we're doing, which is silver exploration in the north, and the name Silver North was born.
Okay, your other assets were copper assets, and you can build a very compelling supply and demand fundamental case around copper. There's a very clear bull market trend kind of emerging in copper as well. And in a sense, if you've got two projects, one is silver and you can build up a supply-demand case there, and copper, you can build a supply-demand case there. Really, what that takes me back to is that the geology was compelling, because you obviously like the exploration potential of your silver asset more than you like the exploration potential of your copper asset. I mean, you can't change what's in the ground, unless you're going down the Briex route, but we don't want to talk about that. But
no.
But you've got to play the cards you're dealt with, Rob, perhaps this is something you might want to comment on. What was it in the geology that made you think, right, we're going to be a silver company rather than a copper company?
Yeah, no, exactly. It is the quality of the geology on both projects, but focusing on Haldane. For us, is our ground position there covers about 30% of the prospective rocks that host the historic Keno Hill mining district. And we're at the western end of that, and Mount Haldane is this, pronounced mountainous feature. And it's gone completely sort of underexplored, poorly recognized, and some of the main reasons for that, in our belief anyway, is that the ice sheets that glaciated the region, they split apart and terminated right at Mount Haldane. So the rest of the Keno Hill district's largely been glaciated. Mount Haldane hasn't been. And so what that ended up doing is we've got a deep oxidation zone, because it wasn't glaciated. You've got all the talus from the mountain itself. So you've got recessive silver vein mineralization. And as a result, here on the western end, it's poorly exposed. Now, back in the discovery days, they did discover silver veins here at Middlecoff and Johnson. And there was production right at that era. There's sort of a little bit of underground development. Undoubtedly, they were upgrading it by hand sorting that stuff. But it was a little bit oxidized, and so that's much harder to deal with, especially 100 years ago in terms of metallurgy.
Metallurgy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you're about 20 kilometers away from ELSA and the center of things. So back in horse and cart days, you're a little bit too far away in terms of becoming a productive center in the district. So that's the situation that we came to in terms of when we acquired the project. So in terms of geology, we have the exact same geological environment. We have the basal Keno Hill quartzite member, which is absolute critical host rock for vein development. And in detail, they have narrow phyllitic segments within that quartzite. And when you apply the strain to create the faults, you open dilational jogs at the interface between those two rock units. And that's where you typically find your widest and best vein mineralization. So all of the same structural regime is there as Keno. the same mineral assemblages, everything. It's a dead ringer, but it's vastly underexplored. I mean, even today, with all of our work on it, there's only a total of 27 drill holes that's ever been completed on the project. And, you know, that's, we think that proves its great potential. With only 27 drill holes, we've made 2-3 new vein discoveries with possibly economic with some mineralization.
Okay. Thank you. That's really useful context. Jason, perhaps coming back to you, the Keno Silver District. I've seen your presentation. You talk about having a kind of a heritage of over 100 years of mining. The Yukon's famously quite a inaccessible part of the world. You know, you've got to be pretty determined to get up there. And 100 years ago, it must have been even more rugged. And I mean, Rob, you mentioned the horse and the cart. Can you just kind of give me a little bit of the history of kind of silver in the Yukon?
Yeah, back at the turn of the century, you know, 1800s into 1900s, you know, you had the Yukon Gold Rush in Dawson City, more to the north and west of this area. Mayo, which is the nearest town to where we are, is kind of, it's almost the geographic center of the Yukon. And those who weren't successful in staking claims and finding gold in the Dawson area, part of that gold rush, they came east, and they just followed some of the major river systems up into, you know, the Mayo area, and ended up and there was some gold placer mining on some of these major rivers, and as they followed them up, they ended up into the Keno area and found galena, you know, silver bearing galena on surface. And as Rob said, you know, that was an area where the glaciers had scraped off all that old oxidized material and exposed fresh sulfide veins that these old timers were able to find, and that sparked the silver rush in the Keno district in the very early 1900s, sort of 1906 range, somewhere in that time frame.
Obviously, the Keno Hill mine has been ticking along ever since. You know, has there been production throughout, or did it close down completely at some stage?
Yeah, there was a few periods that where it was shut down. You know, I think it was sort of 1984. I think there was a shutdown for a while, and then, you know, it was shut down when Alexco came in. I can't even remember what year that was, but it was must have been the late 90s, early 2000s, and actually what they're you know, one of the first things they did is started a reclamation project in the area. I think they actually may have bought the mine property from the government with the, you know, the promise to start this reclamation. And as they did that, then they also sort of got exploration up and running to find some more reserves, and then went into production as Alexco in, I want to say it was 2017, so sometime in that range, Rob. And then in the meantime, they were still doing all that reclamation, and ended up selling off a reclamation business that was basically founded on the Keno area.
And is Hecla going to, have they got public goals on this? Have they stated what they're going to be producing from the Keno Hill mine? Is that public knowledge?
Basically, you know, one of the things they said is they were going to make the Keno district a beachhead for them in the Yukon, and they've kind of lived up to that already with the acquisition of ATAC Resources, whose, you know, gold project was just to the north and east, well, mainly east of the Keno area. So they've lived up to that promise. I think, you know, their goal, and I think they are probably now the North America's largest silver producer with this acquisition. So I think their first priority was to get the mine up and running, get throughput at the mill up to, you know, capacity, and get this thing going, and they should be just sort of at that precipice right now. I think the next quarter two quarters will tell how they've done on that front, but they've been extremely active on the exploration side, following up on some of what the Alexco was doing prior to them. And in fact, the Alexco team was excellent, and they kept, when Hecla took them over, they kept that whole exploration group. And they've done a really good job in exploration and are proving that that these deposits continue to depth, and they've been very active on the exploration front there. So they've definitely come in and jumped in with both feet to get this back up and running.
Looking at what your plans are for the year, Silver North, I see in your outlook for the year you talked about doing 6 drill holes targeting the West Fault and the Main Fault. Are you funded for those 6 holes?
No, we've got about $400,000 in flow-through financing that would be set aside for work at Haldane. The way we kind of look at it here is we kind of want to do a $2 million program to... we just think that at that level, your synergies are kind of maximized, or at least you've reached that threshold where... your mob costs aren't so great and all that. So it really brings our per meter cost.
Is this heli supported?
We would look at doing the occasional hole heli supported, but by and large, it's road access right into the central area where we're drilling. There's good trail network there that we can drag the drill in with a bulldozer to the sites.
But effectively, at $2 million, it gives you the... kind of the momentum, the kind of the critical mass to make a program worthwhile.
Yeah. So that's, you know, if we've got 400 set aside, we'd be looking at doing a $1.6 million raise to fund the rest of that. We could do a smaller program, but that's kind of Rob and I's benchmark. You know, $2 million is where we want to be.
I mean, when I look at the geology, the way that you've described it, you know, Rob, with those the recessive features, the oxidation, the lack of exploration, all of that I can get. You know, that's absolutely fine. In a sense, it's... you know, where are you in the rebrand and the kind of the market pickup of your new story? Because kind of recapitalizing the company is the crucial next step, isn't it?
I think a big step in that is going to be the the results coming out of Hecla. I think that's gonna be a real a push for us. We're already seeing the... just with the way the silver market's gone, we're seeing renewed interest at this point already. So that's really encouraging, and I think as the Hecla story kind of unfolds and people recognize that there is a future for this district and that we're a major player in it, I think that's really, really going to help. So we've seen that transition start already. We just hope with some help from the silver market and obviously good results out of the project that we'll see that really grow.
Have you got any sense on timing on kind of the milestones that Hecla will be looking at?
Well, I think their next quarters, which should come out here pretty shortly, would be, you know, a telling one. So these next two quarters, so the first half of 2024, I think are important. But I can't help but look at the exploration they've done and, just some of the fantastic results that have come out of their drilling, and what they've learned, and been willing to share publicly on the geological front. They just gave a talk in February, mid-February in Vancouver, talking about some of the advances they've made in understanding sort of the framework of these veins and the structure, how they form, and one of the old myths that these veins got zinc rich at depth, they've fully disproved that, and they've shown now that yes, there is a zonation in these things, but it has it's more your distance or proximity to the plumbing structures that are bringing the vein fluids in, rather than just a physical elevation, which that's a fundamental change in how you explore these things. And they've made these public, these findings public, you know, and one, I think they're proud of what they've done, but two, I think they're, you know, in a sense, advertising the progress that they're making, and they're feeling good about where this you know, complex is going for them.
You're also carried on the Tim project by Kerr Mining.
Yes.
Does that the fact that you're carried there, so you've got some there's some activity on your license areas. Does the kind of the lack of funding that you've got kind of for your own projects, does that mean that you're just kind of sitting tight waiting for Hecla to produce? You're just kind of seeing the work that Kerr does catch a bid on the silver price. I'm just curious to understand kind of what your, let's say, your kind of your medium term strategy is, because I can see what the longer term is, which is to explore and kind of you know, march towards the big discovery that every explorer wants to do. But just getting through this little hurdle, I'd be curious to know what your plan is.
Yeah, and that's a great question. I'm really glad you brought that up, because you're absolutely right. Coors funding exploration at Tim, and this year they'll fund a 2,000 meter drill program, which is set to start in June of this year. So the way we would like to see things unfold, and certainly it's trending to unfold the way we want it to, with the better silver market, which we are definitely seeing over the last 5-6 weeks, combined with the fact that we will have a drill program underway with Coeur funding, bring some news flow that is really important. Look, if you're looking at funding at $2 million drill program at 10 cents as a CEO, it's not all that enticing to do that raise when we've got a tight share structure right now that we want to protect. So anything we can do to get that share price up to fund that next financing that will go into the ground at Haldane and drilling there, we're going to take advantage of. So starting in, you know, June, we'll have the news flow of the drill program starting up. That program will go probably majority of the summer season. And then, you know, looking at the later part of the summer for us to get going at Haldane. So it gives us a window there where news flow from the Tim work, better silver market, fingers crossed that is maintained. And then also our own marketing, you know, getting the Silver North story out there, the Haldane and Tim opportunities out there to investors, and doing whatever we can to help support that share price so that financing comes, you know, in the next few months at a higher price. And we do have the luxury of being able to drill at Haldane, well, both projects really, but at Haldane, you know, we're most focused on spending our own dollars. We can drill into December if we need to, and in fact, our discovery hole at the West Fault was drilled in late November of 2020. So you know, that is with that road access, it just gives us that flexibility to work into the winter there.
I mean, you've been exploring Haldane for a number of years now, so presumably you've done all of the low cost easy stuff, which will kind of help identify things. Just in terms of, you know, is there anything left, or are there any other levers you can pull? I don't know, kind of a drone mag survey or something that can be done at low cost to generate new data for Haldane at some stage in the next 6 months or 8 months.
Yes, yeah, there is actually. You know, we focused back in 2019 on taking a step back and did some more regional type soil sampling, and that was 100% successful. That led directly to the drill discovery of the Bighorn vein that was, you know, in a district where there's 100 years of prospecting. That was a positive and surprising result to people. So there's additional soil sampling that can be done following up on sort of regional space lines. There is mag and VTEM type geophysics. What, you know, you can reveal structure with magnetic surveys, of course, and the VTEM is a resistivity EM type survey And what it does very well is gives you the difference between phyllites and quartzites, which are these very important stratigraphic elements to anchoring structure. So that does a good job of revealing where the best structural offsets might be and things like that. So that is a low cost work that we could do leading up to a drill program, and we are funded right now to do that. It's tactically, are we going to do it? When are we going to do it?
Okay, because I mean, when I look at your share price chart and the liquidity, you know, that's obviously, in a sense, it's getting you've got to have enough money to be able to kind of break through on the exploration if you've got good geology and you've got the metal price behind you. But equally, having the low price and it's almost an inhibition to want to go and raise that capital because of the pain it causes in terms of dilution. Unless, of course, you can do a rights issue style thing, which is kind of going back to the existing shareholder. So, Jason, perhaps for you, you know, how retail is the shareholder register? How tied is it? Are there any kind of instos on there that can kind of lead a cornerstone a capital raise?
Yeah, it's kind of split. There are some, you know, institutional holders that we have backing us. They've been great supporters in that, you know, through this, you know, difficult 6 months that most juniors have been just coming through, they haven't been sellers, so that's obviously fantastic. Will they jump in and buy right now? That I think is probably they're sitting on the sidelines at this point from the buy perspective. There is a retail aspect to the shareholder base that tends to be a little more active, but I think where probably our most support comes from is kind of high net worth individuals that we've been, best way to say it is courting through the last number of years. We actually have a small financing that we're doing right now that we have inbound calls, people calling in to take part in the financing, which is something that hasn't been seen in a little while. So we find that very positive. But we are getting some great support from some of these individuals who, you know, it's a mix of brokers and high net worth people that were involved around the time of the discovery, have been on the sidelines and are now, like the way that things are unfolding both in the district and in the silver market, and are coming to the table to help support us. So we want to build on that and use those contacts, those people and that support network that we've built. And that's largely our executive chairman, Mark Brown. That's been kind of his focus, and building those and nurturing those relationships so that we do have them at the table at this time.
Good. I've noticed that a few of these metals, silver being one of them, attracts a certain religiosity. If you know, there's a certain amount of people that come with faith to the table, and I think that's an important element, particularly in silver. Is that financing? Is it public? Is it closed? What's the quantum?
Yeah, we announced it a couple weeks ago. I would say we're oversubscribed at this point. I can confidently say that. So we'll probably end up bumping it up a bit, and then. But as I said earlier, we're not super comfortable doing a big financing at this level. So I think we're going to cut it off slightly oversubscribed and should close it. April 10th is what we announced for the closing target date. So we're going to try
and
to
how much?
Hit that. That was 500,000. So we'll okay. Bump it up to probably somewhere in 550, I'm going to guess.
Okay. And good. There we go, Rob. There's your exploration budget for the summer to do the geophysics, the VTEM and the sampling.
Well, I should say that we have, you know, in Canada, of course, we have flow through and we have hard dollar financings. Flow through can only be spent in the ground, and we have about $400,000 of flow through, you know, that would be set aside for in the ground. And that's what Rob was talking about using to do that VTEM and those surveys, etc. And then this. $550, whatever it ends up being, is hard dollars. So we can use that for G&A And any what we haven't talked about is we've been looking at some other projects, both in the areas we're working and elsewhere, that we would like to potentially add to the portfolio. So that is where that those funds could come in handy as well.
How would that work? Because new projects are surely it's just another hungry mouth to feed, and you've got to kill off some of your children rather than kind of father some new ones.
Yeah, and so that, you know, there's an advantage to having, say, in the Silvertip area, a partner already, and I'll leave it at that. Okay. And then in the Haldane area, there are some other things we're looking at that would feed into the Haldane story. So we're being quite picky about what we look at and what we'd consider taking on. They've got to add strategically to the story. And that would be the basis that we take anything on.
Well, Jason, Rob, thank you very much for your time. It's been a fascinating introduction to the company, Silver North, not Alianza Minerals. Good luck, and go get them, go explorers, go silver.
Thanks very much, and that's what we aim to do. Go silver. Is that you mentioned that the silver investors, and this is something that's a bit new to us. Is just that the. What was the word you used? Religious.
Religiosity. Religious aspect of it. Yeah.
It's been a bit of an eye opener. It's refreshing in a way to see people as passionate about a metal as some of the silver investors are.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.